Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I know you can.
Did we lose our other intro again?
I don't like it.
And what I say goes, hi everybody, nice to see you. My name's Dean.
I like the disclaimer.
Intro?
Yeah.
I don't know if I do. I like it, but it cuts off too quick, and I'm a bit of a sucker for audio and stuff like that. Anyway, welcome. My name is Dean. Nice to see you. That is my friend Lachlan Cross. We just had a Donnybrook off the air. For everybody that's ever been on radio or been in media,
I don't consider what we just went through anything abnormal.
It was a fight. We were fighting. I won.
No.
I'll prove it later, but it was a fight. We fought. But it was constructive.
I wasn't mad at you. All I said was, and this is a great start. Thank you for rehashing this. All I said was, no one cares about politics anymore.
Right.
And people are avoiding it. They're going out of their way to turn it off of their televisions.
Totally.
They're going out of their way to turn it off of their rate. And I understand why now, because it's so people just want to pick a side and just highlight how dumb the other side is. And they're both doing it. Look at this guy. He's an idiot. Look at this guy. He's an idiot. It's all just dunking. And it's so pointless. It's not even like people get up in the mornings.
Who am I going to dunk on Twitter?
And they spend their whole day looking for something to prove a point about the side they don't agree with.
I know.
And I think we got to find a way to move on.
Or exploit it for money. One of the two.
Well, I mean, yeah. And you, I'm sorry.
I like to pick.
I'm trying to highlight the fact that you are obsessed with it.
Nope.
And that you said that you showed me one thing and you said, this is the biggest story of the week.
I
went and I looked and it's not even on the first four pages of Google. Like no one cares about what you showed me.
I'll prove it later.
Yeah, no one cares.
I'm going to force you to care
about. Okay, you can. We'll put it up. Let's bring the guest on because the guest agreed with me. We brought him on.
Dean,
you're an idiot.
He's in the green room.
You talk about politics
smiling
too much,
right now.
And I just met you,
Ian from Sea Change. He's in the green room smiling right now. He's got the coolest microbrew brand, coolest beer brand in the country.
Can we call you, Ian? Bring him on.
I'm not bringing him on yet. You got to agree because he's smiling in the green room. He's watching you. You got to agree not to make him take a side because he didn't take a side.
No.
Like
okay.
Before
we were we'll
on,
move
he was
on.
Like, I'm not taking a side.
We'll move on. Just like you did at the beginning
now
of the
let's
podcast.
Get a Ian, Sea Change Brewing, everybody.
Hey guys.
Okay.
Can we even call you a microbrewery anymore? I mean, every time I go into the store, Ian, I see like every store. Every bar. I'm in Alberta. You're not, you still refer to yourself as a microbrewery? Even though you're taking over Western Canada?
Very often. That sort of question came up actually just, 5 minutes ago in Slack. One of our guys who is in Calgary at the Crossroads Market said, what does it constitute to be a craft brewery or a microbrewery? Is there like a threshold to volume or things like this? And it's sort of an interesting question. I don't know if there's really a great answer for that. But yeah, I mean, we're lucky we have good distribution. And we're, I think that's a byproduct of our hard work put into the products and the branding and the marketing and everything. But yeah, like in the grand scheme of things, we're, we'll do 20,000 heck, which is 2 million liters a year, 2 million liters. But I mean, gosh, yeah, compared to the larger... the Molson and the Labatt's of the world. I mean, that's nothing, nothing.
Yeah, but I mean, you're talking a total different, you know, ball game, country, like 200 years of, you know, sprawling across the country.
Oh, absolutely.
Lobbyists, and I mean, they're all set up. You guys are kind of a cool story, right? Sea Change Brewing. I don't know when you started it. Let's show everybody what you're all about first, because I don't want to Lachlan's point, insult you and call you a microbrewery when you're not. You're a master brewer, right?
I don't think that's an insult. I would wear that, you know,
would you?
With pride. Yeah, being a microbrewer is great. Yeah, I'm fine with that. We're micro.
Is that what you call him, Lach? Micro? You call him a craft brewer? Well, what would you call him?
Yeah. Well, the thing is, like, I think what's happened with the explosion of the craft beer market, what has it been, 10 years, Ian? Probably? Last 5-10 years?
Yeah, when you open, kind of start.
We opened in 2017. Yeah, the last 10 years have been pretty transformative for craft beer.
Mm-hmm. And there's some beers, Dean, in Alberta that are just synonymous with craft beers, with the microbrewery industry, and Sea Change is definitely one of them.
Well, but this is the thing about you guys that I find so fascinating. And we found out about you last week because you are an official partner of Grease Fire, the TV show that Lachlan's working on, barbecue TV show with Mel Schmiller and Aaron from Meat. Yeah. And we heard about you. And then we started having a look at your merch. Like you take a totally different holistic approach, not just to the brewer, right? Like not just to the actual beer, but you take an approach to this, like as a whole brand. You know, from merch to the beers that you offer and the artwork on the can. Like, I would, if I got one of these cans, I'd be like, don't open it. Right. Like, and that's the whole point.
No, but, you want to open it. Trust me.
Yeah. Yeah. So what is this? It was this like an impetus. I want to know the story of your business. I'm fascinated with people that have gone out and made it work. But what is the story of Sea Change? Was it the artwork that got you hooked? Were you a brewer? Like this is a very, very unique brand and it's just cool as you
were
know
you a
what,
poor right? musician
yeah
who needed to find a way to make money.
yeah I mean there's a little bit of everything in there. So yeah, the origin story of the brewery, I was at a poker game many years ago and there was someone who was running a brewery at that poker game. Mm-hmm. He was a friend and was actually the best man at my wedding and all the rest, and still is a great friend and actually works at Sea Change now. But he was running a brewery and said, Ian, you'd be a great sales rep. You should work for us. And at that time, I was and still am a musician, but I was playing actively in a band and bartending and, you know, very much involved in sort of the local hospitality industry. So knew a lot of owners of bars and restaurants and things like that. So I think there was a natural synergy there. So I went on to work for that brewery and, you know, took to it, you know, very naturally and sold a lot of beer and really helped that company grow and thrive. And when I started there, they weren't doing so good. Eventually my friend left and then I went on to take over that brewery and, sort of put music on the back burner because I had the opportunity to run that company. And to be honest, I had no business doing so. So it was a great learning opportunity for me. And
I love the honesty. Hang on just a second. I love the honesty. I'll tell you why. Because not many guys in your position, you can now, right? You can look back and go, I had no business running that business. But now you're running a big business. You look back on that, like me back in the day where I'm like, I could do a morning show in Vancouver at 19. No big deal. Right. Like you just the ignorance that you have. Did you ever get caught with your pants down where you're like, yeah, I'm the boss. And you're like, I hope no one finds out. I have no idea what I'm doing. Did you ever get to that point?
Yeah. Oh, I was in over my head the entire time. I think you got to have, and maybe in some ways still am, but I've learned a lot. I'm doing better. But yeah, with experience looking back at, oh my gosh, like we've learned so much. And to know now what I didn't know then is really eye-opening. But I think you need a certain amount of optimism and courage or false enthusiasm, or I don't know how you... But you got to have a little bit of insanity to think, you know, to run something. But I think a lot of the
time I love how you call it false enthusiasm. I think that might be one of the best explanations for, like, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm going to give her a go that I've ever heard in my entire life. Good for
that's
you.
That's the
right?
next because brewery, of, Ian.
Well,
you got to start.
False enthusiasm. Yeah, that's the next beer. Right. But
That reminds me of Blind Enthusiasm, our friends on Happy Beer Street there.
They got a good product as well.
Yeah, they're doing well. So, So yeah, we were doing that, and I was doing that, and I've always been, I guess, relatively ambitious in anything I did. So, you know, and the band stuff really correlates with this. It's a lot of a DIY, and you know, and to get up and play songs in front of people, it's, you know, do something that you created, think that you're good enough to do that. It takes a certain level of insanity, you know, like you either are good enough or you aren't. And most of the time when you start, you aren't, you know, just like the business. I wasn't really ready, but I did it anyways. And when I started performing, I wasn't good enough to do it, but I did anyways and kept working at it.
Owls by Nature, right?
Yeah. Owls by Nature was the name of the band, and we did all right, but
yeah, you guys so, were great though.
Yeah. And we put a lot of effort into that. So anyways, so went from that, and with that entrepreneurial spirit that I had and wanting to start bands and everything I'd ever been involved with, I kind of always wanted to get into business. So I approached the person who I was running the brewery for, who is sort of an absentee owner, and said, hey, like, you know, cut me in. Like, I've grown the business and I want to be involved, have a seat at the table. And that didn't pan out. So I said, well, I'll go do my own thing. And at that point, the owner of the business I was working for said, I guess called my bluff in a way and said, all right, well, good luck. Cause he knows what it costs to open a brewery and, you know, probably thought I couldn't do it. And, you know, mostly was right about that. Cause it's very difficult. We somehow managed. But then I went and leased a space and recruited a group of people. And, you know, one thing I will credit myself with was we all have a shared love for beer on the team. And we all have a shared love for the product, but we have a very different skill set. Like there's no overlapping skill sets on our team. So when I built, you know, I didn't have the funds to go and start a brewery and just start paying people. So, you know, I brought in partners, equity, sweat equity partners, and also knowing from my prior experience that, you know, I wanted to bring on really talented people that weren't going to have, that were going to share in the success of this thing. So I was able to bring on a general contractor. Obviously, at the beginning, that was important. A master electrician, a head brewer, a branding and marketing guy, a financing guy, someone else who had a ton of hospitality experience and connections and helping us with sales and all those kinds of things. And I shouldn't just say guy. I could mention all their names, and I appreciate them all greatly. They know that. But that's, I think, when you look at our brand and it looks so fleshed out, that's a part of why, because we've been able to build a team with skill sets that lend to that. And it was purposefully built that way. It wasn't just, you know, we were all friends, but it wasn't just three friends who happened to all like beer that all brewed beer and then decided to do this. I knew when we entered into the market, you know, and it wasn't as competitive as it is now, but I knew it was very competitive and we needed to come into the market with something compelling and we had to be good on every level. The branding needed to be next level, in our opinion. The product itself needed to be amazing. The experiential marketing, the client relationships, the taproom experience, the hospitality, everything needed to be as absolutely good as we could make it. And that's how we would succeed. And that has, you know, proven to be true. And it's worked out pretty well.
Was there a point, Ian, where you stopped waking up in the middle of the night screaming? And you went, all right, I think we got this. This is working.
Yeah. And that was like about a month before COVID hit.
These stories from guys like you. Yeah. Like a month before COVID hit, I was shitting my pants and then COVID hit.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, gosh, you know,
take us through that as someone like you're panicking month before, right? You're probably still trying to put this together. You started in 2017. It's now 2019, 2020. And you start hearing rumblings of shutdowns and people not being able to go into places to drink your beer. So take us through that. Month before
he shipped, Ian's got a shift too, Dean. Like he did something very interesting in COVID, and I think it set him apart from the rest of the industry. So I know you're going to get into that once you talk. You finish this next segment here. But yeah, very cool story.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, happy to talk about it. It was terrifying but transformative for our business, and we were able to pivot. We were able to pivot through it and do some interesting things, but it was just an absolute horror show for a while. And you know, so classic. You know, I had my house up against the lease, and you know, it's just everything was, I was all in on this working.
Super leveraged. Cause let me set the
table for you.
Your house is mortgaged once, maybe twice. You're fucking taking out third mortgages, chip mortgages. You're asking parents, you got to put it in. I'm almost there. I'm almost there. You got to friends, family, guy.
Dad sold his Harley.
Lending tree. Yeah. You might go turn a couple tricks down at the Greyhound station. You're like doing everything you can.
Yeah.
And, by the way, I'm in your boat. I'm with you. I'm you right now. Everything you can. And all of a sudden.
You can relate, eh, Dean?
COVID.
Yeah, well, I had personal guarantees on everything and, you know, didn't get any help from the parents, but it was relatively stressful. But, you know, that's the thing. Like I was, you know, in my early 30s when we started. So I felt like, yeah, this is the time to take a big swing. Right. And that's what we did. But when COVID happened, we were at the point for the first time, you know, we just opened our Beaumont tap room, I think about 8 months prior. And so we had two tap rooms and we had a good, solid hospitality business. So going to licensees, draft accounts, stuff like that. And for the first time, we actually had some money in the bank. You know, like we were seeing, like, you know, and I had no business understanding. So I didn't know how to read a balance sheet or anything. I'm just like, sell more beer. That'll help. You know, let's sell more beer. That was kind of my solution to everything. How do you fix things? Well, you increase sales or decrease costs. And my thing was, well, increase sales. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and then at a certain point, I'm saying, oh man, every week the bank account balance is going up. We've got cash flow. This is looking great. Hallelujah. You know, and I'm, you know, still bartending, doing stuff and swinging hammers, building the tap rooms, doing all that stuff. And then COVID happens and thank God, like if COVID had happened 3 months earlier, we would have been totally fucked, I think. But we had enough money in the bank. We had some runway that when everything shut down, you know, we had a bit of runway and thank God for that. But, you know, I remember sitting at the bar having drinks, you know, probably crying, thinking like, well, you know,
did you cry for real? Did you cry for real? Yeah.
Yeah, I did. And you know, it was just like, I thought it was going to be all over, you know, but luckily, so we had a meeting shortly after all this. And once they shut the tap rooms down, because, you know, we had no retail business. We weren't in bar. We weren't in liquor stores. We were in bars and restaurants and tap rooms. Literally everything we had went to zero. So our revenue went to nothing. And, you know, I think we had 30 employees at the time and, you know, called them in and had to lay them all off. That was a tough meeting. And managers and people we know, and, you know, we're a small business and, you know, a lot of our friends and we love these people. So that was difficult. And we had this idea. We were the first in Alberta to do it, but we were like, you know, we want to stay busy. So just the ownership group, we're going to sit in different areas of the city and just deliver beer to people for free, which that was sort of our way of looking at a lot. Like, we weren't asking for help. We understood people were scared. This is fucked up. No one knows what's happening. We weren't like, hey, you know, donate to our brewery or do anything like that. We weren't even thinking about money or anything. We're just like, what can we do here to separate ourselves, look at this a little differently, make some lemonade out of all these lemons that were being handed. And so we made a little Instagram post. Hey, you know, delivery, we'll deliver anywhere you want in the city and, you know, for free. Brilliant. And let us know. And so we made that post about half hour after I laid everyone off.
Yeah.
And literally the phone and the, like, it went insane. It was nuts. And our taproom manager at OG Sierra, she said, you know, we have a bad habit of underestimating ourselves of what something is going to be. And she put it really well. And we definitely underestimated what this is going to be. So the phone was just ringing nonstop. Like, I would answer the phone and then it would be call waiting, 3-4 voicemails, getting Instagram messages. So laid them off, made the post half an hour later. 5 minutes after that, literally, they were all hired back. Said, I need everyone back here. This is crazy. And, and that's what we did. And then we created a little command center and had Sierra was on the phone. And she looked at me at one point. She's like, the phone won't stop ringing. I don't know what to do. And there was like real fear in her eyes, just totally overwhelmed. If anyone who's listening has been a server, a
good story.
If anyone in who's listening has been a server and, you know, you're just getting rolled and how stressful that is. that was, this was that for her. And I just looked at her and I was like, it's going to be okay. Let it go to voicemail and I'm going to call people back. So she was answering whatever she could. I was calling the voicemail, taking down numbers, calling people back, getting addresses, figuring it out. My wife's doing stuff. Everyone's out delivering. We were going,
I think I may have talked to your wife.
Yeah.
But you also had a vehicle. You had a cool vehicle too. Tell us about that.
Well, we've got a couple cool vehicles, but we import like Kai trucks. So we do that. We had a 5-ton truck all deckled up, but I just want to carry this on. So we're doing it for no charge, no nothing. And we're selling out of beer and making more beer, but I'm realizing the bank account is going down. Mm-hmm. So, you know, on one hand, oh my gosh, we're getting all this great support. And I think it was an amazing marketing effort and it changed the complexion of our business because people now knew who we were.
Yeah.
And, you know, more, at least more people knew who we were and the word really spread. And I think people, that experience, I think stayed with them that we went and brought them beer, like a 4-pack. There was no minimum, a 4-pack, flats, whatever you want. We'll do it. Like a little over a 4-pack to Mill Woods or to the North Side, you know, made no sense. No sense. So, but it helped. People liked it. So we're busy as hell. Everyone's working and the bank account is going like this. So I'm realizing, man, we're losing money on this because we're not charging for delivery. This is, you know, but we're not going to start, you know, hey, whatever. We're going down with the ship. Like, let's do this. And luckily, right when I was like, these tap rooms have to open. We closed our tap rooms a couple weeks earlier because it was just so messed up. We're like, I don't know. We're closing this. We don't know. We don't want to put anyone in danger. This is when no one knew what this thing was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we were being extra cautious, but when it came to opening, they said you can open. I was open that day because we had to say there was no other way. So, but it was literally when the reopening happened, I was in there and like looking at our burn rate thinking we got a week and we're done. You know, I got to go raise more money. I don't know what I'm going to do. This is nuts. And it just timed so well that that things reopened. And then when we reopened, the tap rooms were so busier than they've ever been. Mm. And at this point, we had also been pushing into some retail, building that channel that we never did before. And now we got retail. Now we're in 600 liquor stores at this point, pushing. And the tap rooms are going. And the business just was, you know, from that point forward, it's just been smooth sailing. Mm. And that's been amazing. But yeah, that was a hell of a story and quite a pivot. And like I said, made a lot of lemonade out of the situation. But, you know, we just took it. We took that perspective of how do we help here? What can we do that's intriguing, that's interesting? And I think people really resonated with that.
You know, what I find fascinating about businessmen, specifically young guys, right? You're under 40, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah,
30. Yeah. Young guys is that, you know, you called it, you said, you know, I didn't know any better when I was running a business. That's to your advantage
in
a situation like where you're going through like an atomic bomb of business that you can't control, right? You know, everything shuts down. You're on the mark for all the money. You've signed all the notes. You're leveraged to the nuts. And you got one decision to make, right? And in that moment, that ignorance, I think, is everybody's best friend, specifically if you're a business person, right? Which is like, hey, listen, I don't know any better. I've never failed. It's my first kick at the can. I've been trying to hump this together for years. I can't quit now because I am so pot committed. But there are people who have experienced that failure that won't go back into the mouth of the lion, right? There are a lot of people who have just said, you know what? I'm not interested in climbing this mountain. But what I find fascinating about really successful people is that resilient response where you're like, you know, we're going to have to make hard decisions. You lay a bunch of people off. But then you say to yourself, what are our choices? Close up? Or we all get in our cars, fill the Chevy Sprint with cases of Sea Change, and we deliver. Sure, was it a business plan that was involved? No, you weren't charging delivery fees. All the time stuff worked out. You got your tap rooms turned back on. But it's in those moments, right, where you're like, oh, my God, what do we do? And that ignorance legitimately is like, doesn't matter. We have to do something. And I find that fascinating about really successful business people all the time. They don't look to the alternative of just, you know, taking a bunch of hammers and nails and boarding everything up and going home because they can't be bothered. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that's we weren't shutting the doors. It was just let's keep going. And yeah, I think that is a part of our sort of our ownership group's resilient entrepreneurial spirit. And part of me, I was listening intently to what you were saying. I was just looking at my phone because I was pulling up. I have a list of quotes that I like. and I couldn't pick this one. I knew I could have paraphrased it, but the quote is, when we started, we had a few massive advantages. We had no money, no plan, and no experience. And that one resonates with me, because I think a lot of, success or how you frame things is about your perspective. And not having experience a lot of the times can be a real blessing, because you don't have a lot of that baggage that comes along with, you know, certain ingrained expectations of things, you know, and no plan, because you don't have to stay rigid to that, you know, because what's a plan? It changes, man. You got to be flexible. You got to adjust course. And a lot of times you got to adjust course a lot and figure out, you know, like consumer interests are always changing. And that's just not with COVID. COVID was a once in a lifetime event that, you know, that like really tests your, you know, your adaptability muscle. And how do I figure this out? Like, God, right? That's it was the ultimate of tests. And, you know, we had some advantages in our specific industry. You know, I think alcohol sales didn't go down during COVID. People were taking time off, having a drink, you know, so that was good for us. But
I love that. Dude, yeah, that's the thing. If you're in the alcohol game during COVID, you had the biggest, wildest ride, because you heard, hey, you can't sell any booze. Well, and then all of a sudden, everybody's at home doubling down, though. Everybody's like,
you have established sales channels. Yes. Like if you're a big guy and you're in retail, everyone's a little different. We were different because we were kind of fucked, because all of our revenue was through those streams.
Sure.
So yeah, no money, no plan, no experience. So no plan, you don't have to stay rigid. No experience, because you're not tied down with that baggage. And no money, which seems so weird, because even stuff we've done in moving forward, we intentionally put restraints on things, because I like having, you know, no money forces you to be creative. It forces you to look at things laterally and find new ways of doing stuff. And that actually ties in very much so to our band life, no money. So how do we do stuff? You know, it's DIY. It's finding
ways to
create more out of less and being resourceful. And that's another quote I love is, would you rather be resourceful or have resources? And the answer is always resourceful, because you can build resources from that, you know, and it's very easy to squander things. You know, a story as old as time is someone inherits a lot of money and squanders it. So no plan, no money, no experience. And, you know, you could spin a different story. You could say all these advantages. We had a huge team with a lot of experience and a bunch of funding, and lots of companies have grown that way. And that's great. But, you know, that our experience was no plan, no money, no experience. And we just took that situation and found ways to use it to our advantage.
But sometimes those mistakes pay off massively. And again, listen, you have a great product. You have a great image with the product. People recognize what it is. There's a consistency when you go into the store to buy Sea Change. You don't have to look very hard to find it, because it's very consistent. Even those cans all look very different, there's just this overall feel that you guys have. So I think people have gravitated towards it, not just
badass
product, but also because of the imaging of it. But I'm back to your decision not to charge for delivery. Man, we talked about it on our radio show that you guys were doing it. And if you had charged for delivery, you might not have got the response that you got. By the way, can I say this? A quick sidebar. I hadn't tried the Death Wave lager until the first filming of Grease Fire. And I got to tell, if anybody is a anti-craft beer guy, like if you're not, and there are people out there that are, they drink macros and they like their Coors Light or their, but you have to go.
They don't have taste buds though.
No. The Death Wave is a very clean, nice, crisp beer. I was blown away that whatever you guys did with that, that's awesome. That's one of the better lagers I've ever had. Anyway, I think that mistake you made financially by not charging Ian for deliveries exploded in this town. Everybody was talking about the fact that you guys were delivering beer. If you had charged, you wouldn't even have got even remotely the reaction you did. But because it was so crazy what you guys were doing, it carried you guys through COVID. Mm-hmm. And maybe part of the reason why you guys are where you are right now, which is you're taking over the beer market in Alberta.
Yeah, we're trying. And I think, the beer delivery had a lot to do with it. It was
brilliant.
It was sort of an unplanned marketing expense
Totally.
And it worked out pretty good. And just to your death wave point, I just wanted to say a couple things you brought up I could elaborate on, unless you have more specific questions. But do you want me to elaborate on these things?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So yeah, you brought up death wave.
Hey, sorry, just a second. I just got to stop you for a quick second. Are you actually taking notes during this interview too?
I am. Yeah.
First of all, I don't know if that's allowed with us. You look like way too much of a keener, and you're making me feel bad for not taking any notes. So there's that. That's one thing. And the second thing is, good for you.
Well, thank you. Yeah, no, I've gotten into the habit. I do so many meetings. Like before this, I had a sales meeting, and
yeah,
you know, like we have a musical background and a sort of a punk rock ethos, but a part of that is, you know, we want to perform at a high level.
Yeah.
You know, we
dude, like, I got a book. I've said this yeah. for so many years now. I'm like, I've never met anybody who's uber successful who didn't write shit down ever. So yeah. good for you.
Yeah. Well, I can't trust the brain. The brain is no good to me. I need to develop good habits and write things down. So that's a part of my thing. Not cool, I guess, but functional. So death wave. So you brought up death wave and how it's great. And I completely agree. So just a couple things about that. We've won best light lager in Canada 2 out of the past 3 years at the Canadian Brewing Awards. So it is absolutely, you know, like lagers craft, the craft lager revolution is totally in full swing. It's been happening for a couple of years and more than that probably. So there are a lot of good craft lagers, and lagers are a little different because there's less in the beer for off flavors or bad things to show up. Like there's less hiding, you know, in a lager. So, you know, the fact that we have a light lager that has nationally been recognized by, you know, so good taste buds there, Lachlan. It is very good. It's nationally recognized. It's one of the best, if not in my opinion, the best light lager. And I'll put that up against Coors Light, everything. So yeah, like if you're into that kind of beer, it's a craft style. It's not looked down upon in our craft world. We're open to everything. We're all about taste and flavor and you know, all the rest. And we're big tent.
Really good.
Not to bring any political stuff into this, but
Lachlan will lose it. Just don't.
Yeah, do don't want Lachlan to go fucking crazy on us here.
No.
Oh, sorry. Can I swear? Did I swear there?
Yeah, you can only swear 3 times a show. We have a swear jar.
I'll make a note. I've sworn one. I've got 2 more.
Yeah, okay. Fuck. Seriously.
Okay. Hey, no, there's 2. And then Lachlan, you were just mentioning the cans and stuff and how there's a connecting thread. And that's this sort of aspect of the business we don't get a lot of opportunity to talk about. But I take a lot of pride in sort of how intentional we are with things. And you know, this is sort of an aspect of where art and commerce are merging. And I think it started with our tap handles when we were draft focused. We were looking at a lot of tap handles, and what we're trying to do is convey messages to people through what's on the tap handle, on the can, and how do we convey that message? And, you know, we wanted something that, you know, we wanted a connecting thread through all of them. So we wanted a bit of a template, but we want to, you know, not to name the competition, but Budweiser, for example, they produce a ton of products, but a lot of them are banner products where they're producing the thing. It's like, oh, here's Budweiser, here's Bud Light, here's Alexander Keith. And that's the tap handle. People know what it is, but we're a brewery and that's what it is. It's Sea Change. And we have all these different products. So we have a more challenging thing there where we, in a tap handle only, we have to convey what the brewery is, what the product is, and what the brand identity is. What's the image? What are we trying to convey there? And that's hard to wrap all into one. And I haven't seen that done very well, actually, with a lot of tap handles in the market. So we actually did that very well. So if you're in bars and restaurants and you see our tap handles, I think you'll see all those 3 points. You're going to see everything. And and then when you've seen one, your brain can identify another one, even though they are different. And we took that same process and applied it to the cans. So, you know, there's a template there. So if you've seen one and you're looking on a shelf, you can recognize, oh, that's a Sea Change product. But also they have their own unique individual identities, which is important. And that's something that I saw in the craft beer world that was a little, you know, it's difficult. Like we, from the beginning, brought in Pete Nguyen, who's an amazing local branding, like an illustrator, but also a professional branding and marketing guy. And a lot of breweries, you know, from their structure set up, so they didn't have that. So they're having to go to third-party places or find out ways to get new designs and stuff that isn't so cohesive. And, you know, they'll put out a can where it's like, it has amazing artwork on it, but you can't quite tell what brewery is this. You can't tell by just looking at the shelf what it is. And so for us, that was really important. And the way the cans look now is a byproduct of all that effort into putting in, like, you know, it has to look badass and have, you know, a lot of artistic integrity, but it also has to have a connecting thread where people know that they're tied together and this is all from the same brand.
The Locker Room on Cryer Media West is brought to you by Ardent Roof Systems. Sign up for the annual Ardent Roof Systems Charity Golf Tournament. Do that today. Spots are filling up. Early bird pricing in effect until May 1st, and there's still room for sponsors. Give Stacy a shout or drop me a line. I'll hook you up with Stacy. Friday, July 5th. At the Ranch Golf and Country Club, one of the best courses in Alberta, your 18-hole round includes breakfast, the famous ranch steak dinner, a massive silent auction, a lot of fun, and a chance to give back to a very worthy cause, the Stollery Child Life Program. This will be the fifth year, and to date, Stacy and Arden have raised over $65,000 for the Stollery. If you're looking for any info or you'd like to register yourself or your team, ardenroofsystems.com. We'll see you there. This is one of my favorite tournaments of the year.
As always, the Dean Blundell Show is brought to you by our friends at factcheck.io. Factcheck.io. Do you believe? The good people at FactCheck are a quorum of software professionals, psychological professionals, journalists, that have been very busy building some software so that you can fact check anything that you read. It doesn't matter if it's got a URL, you'll be able to fact check it. Alternative sources, origins, whether or not it was an organic or inorganic campaign, whether or not you can trust the people that are putting out the information and alternative sources. And there's going to be a weapon button too, where you can turn that information around and put it back out there accurately to combat disinformation. The good people at factcheck.io are right now testing their beta version of their free program. Yes, it will be free for anybody who wants to use it. They want to battle disinformation because it is a problem. Go to factcheck.io today. FACTCHEK.io. FACTCHEK.io. The world's most robust fact-checking disinformation software for news, social media, video, print, anything spoken word. These people are on the tip. And they use some of the finest software technology to be able to give you the advantage when it comes to getting agency back in your life, when it comes to information that you read. Go to factcheck.io today for more information. Sign up for the beta test, FACTCHEK.io. The Dean Blundell Show is brought to you by factcheck.io. Factcheck.io, makers of the world's most comprehensive fact-checking software, that have been very busy building some software so that you can fact check anything that you read. It doesn't matter if it's got a URL, you'll be able to fact check it. Alternative sources, origins, whether or not it was an organic or inorganic campaign, whether or not you can trust the people that are putting out the information so that you can give yourself agency over information in the age of disinformation. Again, want to beta test their product? They're going to launch it in the next month or two. Go to factcheck.io today. FACTCHEK. .io. Back to the show.
Well, and you did say that you don't get enough credit for the images that you have created for the beers that you are putting out there under the Sea Change umbrella. But I will say this, when we had our pre-meetings about Grease Fire, the cooking show, first episode still in the editing process. As soon as it's ready, I'll let everybody know when you can go watch that. But when we were sitting down discussing, you know, potential partners and who to reach out to, Sea Change came up because we're all fans of your beer. But then I remember quite quickly, we were like, we got to see if we can talk Ian into doing a logo. So it was
right.
There was an immediate thought and an immediate purpose behind reaching out to you outside of free beer. But that partnership included the gifts that you guys have at the brand that you've created from an image perspective. So we saw it, we recognized it.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. And, you know, we get a lot of requests for things. We're super busy. It's insane, but no, I like, you know, that's where your head's at. And if there's a way we can collaborate, absolutely we will. And, you know, I've thought opening up a marketing agency would be fun because I think, you know, but very lateral stuff, very off the wall. Like a lot of our marketing, it's almost could be considered anti-marketing. And we have a lot of fun with it. And from the images to our social media presence to some of the stunts we pull. And
yeah, it's super irreverent brand. All the brands underneath the Sea Change brand, it's very comforting, very homey, very cool, very artistic. But it's very, very badass, to your point. Like it's, you know, I would wear Sea Change merch all the time. You just, it's a really cool brand. It's a cool shirt. And you're very, like, that's how I know someone's got a home run is like, hey, man, whatever's on the can, whatever's on the product, if I put that on a shirt and I would rock that every day, that's a pretty cool brand. And not a lot of people focus on those things, Ian, which is cool.
I think that's a great point. And it's, like our merch in terms of line items of sales, it's up there. And that's really cool to see. And I think it does speak to the fact that we're doing something right. And an example, I was in the band and we toured in Europe and quite a few times. And every time I was over there, I'd always see the skull and crossbone shirt, St. Pauli. And I never knew it's a soccer team. I had no idea. I don't know anything about soccer. I'm like, what?
Do you know the story of that soccer team, by the way, St. Pauli?
No, happy to hear it though.
Yeah. They're owned by a woman who owns a brothel.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's a German soccer team, second division.
I know the logo.
Yeah, it's one of the coolest soccer logos of all time. Skull and crossbones at St. Pauli. I had a whole bunch of stuff because we went to Germany, and I was fascinated with the St. Pauli story. So I went to the actual grounds and bought a shirt, and I talked to the lady who actually owned the team, or one of the people that says she owned the team. I don't know, and literally a brothel owner, and they pay their German athletes in all kinds of ways.
Oh. All right.
But it's one of the coolest sports logos on the planet, and it's super simple, which is why I love it.
Well, and I thought, you know, and I saw that in Germany, in Switzerland, and I saw the shirts all over, and I thought, wow, that's an interesting example of
the merch being bigger than the team. Yeah.
Well, or just transcending the product.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, there's lots of examples of that, you know, where people will wear something and they're not a fan of the team or this or that, and you know, but the merch and the branding has transcended the actual thing. And I think that's something we've managed to do here as well. And it's really cool, but it also, you know, we sort of, you know, how sales puts pressure on production and production puts pressure on sales, depending on how things are going. Mm-hmm. Branding puts pressure on recipe development. You know, we want the product, you know, we're a product first company. Now product means the beverage itself and then also the can and all of it. But, you know, we're trying, you know, it inspires the brewing team so that, you know, when you have a really badass looking can, that when you take a sip from that, it has to be as equally good. We don't want to, you know, so and vice versa. You know, when we create sometimes we'll create a brand and then fit the product to the brand, and sometimes we'll create a product and then fit the brand to the product. Mm. And they are both inspiring to all the creative aspects of our company. So, you know, we're lucky. We've got really talented people all throughout and just humming on all cylinders. Everyone trying to live up to the expectation of all the different departments.
Just a couple questions, serious ones though. Is it true only douchebags drink IPAs? Yes or no?
I love the IPAs. That was my gateway into the craft. Cause I'm like, I'm that
what's
guy.
That, what's
my
the hang
first
up?
Beer at 12 was Budweiser. And then I just drank that for 200 years. And then I got to Alberta and everyone's like, you got to expand your taste, your horizons here. So I started to get into taste some beers and I hit an IPA that I really liked. And I was like, that's what I started.
But there's a narrative around IPAs that you only drink them if you're a scarf wearing hippie now. Is that true? Yes or no?
There is a bit of
No. Okay. I'm just asking. I don't need an explanation. Is it a you're hippie not wrong, brew? Okay. I was just asking. And why? Why do they say it's a hippie? And here's the other question. Does it cause moobs? I've heard that too. Does IPA cause moobs? Man boobs? Yes or no?
Oops. I don't think so. No.
Just asking. What I've heard. I heard IPAs give people
moobs.
It's
hops. That was one of hops in general, I think, can give you man boobs.
Oh, really? Okay.
It's not IPAs.
Hey, listen, I love talking business marketing, but I also love talking about man boobs and Kensington Market beers. So it's okay. So
where did you move here from, Lachlan? Just curious.
Well, I bounced around. When you're in radio, you end up moving around. So I was in BC, went to radio school. Then I was in Alberta. I did Edson, Fort Mac, Prince George, Winnipeg, and I've been in Edmonton since 2006.
I just find it interesting because you said when you got to Alberta, everyone says you got to expand your palate a bit. And I think that's probably a byproduct of the trade relationships we're talking about and how in Alberta, really, you know, the consumer has a lot more choice and the consumer really wins here. Whereas, yeah, those, you know, other provinces, you know, you're talking about coming from, you don't have as much choice. So you might not have been introduced to these things.
Manitoba was awful. Yeah, like yeah. You couldn't get anything in Manitoba. There was zero selection. And I know my daughter from Alberta, who I passed on the drinking gene to, God love her. She complains all the time because she likes all sorts of different stuff, right? Like she'll get into cocktails, she'll drink beer, she likes wine. And she complains all the time about the lack of choice you have in Ontario. So they have a much tighter grip. I know the wine industry in BC is really strong. But I don't know it comparatively speaking. Does BC have a similar craft brewery like culture in BC that we have in Alberta? Because it's huge in Alberta.
Yeah, it's huge in Alberta. Like Alberta went, I think, from 24 breweries in 2016 to like 150.
Yeah.
So. But we had sort of this pent up demand because of some provincial rules that really weren't friendly to craft brewing. Whereas BC, I think, nurtured their scene a bit more. And there was I don't know all the intricacies of all of this, but I think BC was able to sort of develop a bit more of a craft beer scene because of some of the provincial regulations. So they had a bit of a head start on us, but you know, the best barley in the world, is coming from Alberta. We got access to a lot of these great local ingredients. So we've caught up, and I think, our scenes are probably equally as vibrant now, I would imagine. And I think, you know, the Alberta breweries here are putting out some of the best beer in the country. And I think that's evidenced, too, by the national awards and things like that.
It's really, that's what it comes down to, right? It comes down to the ingredients. Still, barley, yeah. Edmonton, Alberta, the best barley in the world.
Well, you got to know what you're doing with those ingredients. You know, you can take a great cut of meat and fuck it up, but it's really hard to take a shitty cut of meat and make it great. You know, yeah. So it's you got to start with great ingredients, and then you have to have a lot of craft and skill put into that. Hence, craft beer. Mm-hmm. No, totally. Like the foundation of it is great ingredients. Sorry to cut you.
Provincial rules, Ian, that sort of impede the business. Like when you go from Ontario to comparatively speaking to Alberta and even like BC, like if I go into a liquor store in Alberta and I try to buy a wine that I've, heard about, Blasted Church or something like that, I'll go to the liquor store and it'll be like $50. I'm like, I'm not buying that. I'm going to buy that Chilean wine for 12, right? Like it seems bizarre to me that it is so, I don't know if competitive is the right word, but that there is this idea that we can't let Alberta and what they're creating succeed in BC and vice versa. Is that something that you, as somebody who's probably going to become more influential in the business of being a brewer, is that something that you think you can have play a part in changing? Just to open up those borders?
Yeah, I mean, a little. I sit on the Alberta Small Brewers Association Policy Committee. So, these are things that we do focus on is how do we work with government, at the provincial level and federal and everything to make the market for Alberta brewers a bit more accessible and better, and how do we help Alberta brewers? So there's lots of ways to do that. And one of them is, trying to remove some of these provincial barriers that we think are hampering growth and not just Alberta brewers growth. I mean, just in general and brewers in general. What I think we should have is reciprocal trade agreements. It's not,
sense.
Not mind blowing stuff, but
so hold it before you get to, no, it's not mind blowing stuff, but if I want to say something, I'm going to forget this whole aspect of the conversation.
Just write a note down.
Okay. I should just open up my booklet. Sorry. No, no, no. That's good. Give it to me, dude. I just mocked you for writing things down. Mock me right back. I like it. I can take it. Are you telling me that you can't just ship products between provinces like beer? You can't just phone up the LCBO in Toronto. If you're selling 2 million hex of your own beer where you are, you can't just call up and go, hey, this is kind of the biggest new thing in Western Canada. We're really successful. Do you want it? And they're like, yeah, go ahead, send it, and we'll give it a go. Like, is it like you can't cross state lines with alcohol? Is it that kind of shit, or is it just protectionist? What is it?
Protectionist.
Yeah, it's very protectionist. I mean, you know, like, so the LCBO has intakes where they'll take submissions. I don't know how often, but you know, there's like twice a year maybe or something like that. Don't quote me on it. But
LCBO's the booze mob out here, by the way. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, out in Ontario. Yeah. So, you know, and they'll, you know, in that submission, you basically put together a pitch deck, or at least we do, is, you know, it's a really well presented stuff. Here's how awesome we're doing. Here's the growth numbers. Here's the rest. And, you know, we'd love to try it out there. And you know, if you were doing 2 million hex, which is, you know, huge, we're doing 20,000, but let's say it was 2 million. I mean, God, you know, you're huge at that point. So you're probably not worried about any of this, but yeah, you put all those numbers in and try to make a case, and they say no, and you move on, you know? So that's generally how it goes. And yeah, it's very protectionist.
Stupid. I had no idea that was the case. I thought you could just like go call someone up if you're making beer in like Saskatchewan, and then you could call somebody up in BC and go, hey, I got this beer. You want to try it? And they're like, sure, send us a couple cases, see how it goes. But there are rules in place from province to province, the jurisdictional liquor board or whatever it is in each province,
the provincial
liquor control board.
It's weird. They're all different, and I'm not an expert on all the intricacies of all of this. You know, we have a head of sales and people that work with this stuff. So if
Do you ship out here? Are you allowed to ship out here? Like if I ordered from you, would you be able to ship the beer out here?
I don't believe so. I don't think that's like to the letter of the law. I could be wrong.
I can order cannabis from Alberta, but I can't order.
You know, you might be able to. Don't quote me on it. I'm not 100% sure on that. I should know, but I don't.
You got to figure that out because you've got
Ian,
this.
I
you've
think
got
some
case
people
of,
have found loopholes on that.
Well, we should.
I'm with you.
But the weight of everything, you know, it's like shipping a flat is expensive. So
for a guy like me, though, so I'm a non-drinker, right? But I love NA beer. And you've got this straight edge beer, which if your branding is as good as your pints, and I've heard from everybody it is, I'm the kind of guy that would just order that all the time, but you're telling me I can't get it.
No, that we can do. Non-alcoholic, we can do. That poses some other issues, but there isn't as much provincial control over that. That's a non-alcoholic product. That's, you know, that's the Wild West.
Yeah,
so we can
still
do that.
You should be able to be. It's so stupid. It's so dumb. I get the protectionist measures, but like this should be a meritocracy. Alcohol should be a meritocracy. If it's a great product and you can sell it, it's a big, you should be able to be allowed to grow your product across the country, right?
Yeah, I think so. And I think the consumer wins in that scenario, and then it forces more competition and for, you know, products to get better. And I think that's overall a great thing.
Good for the economy, maybe.
Yeah. I think it's good for everybody.
Yeah.
But, you know, things are set in their ways. And I think as Albertans, you know, as Albertan business people, we have a specific view on this because, you know, I think there's a sort of underlying sense that things are unfair, you know, because we're open. You know, like we look at our liquor store shelves and we have an absolute plethora of options. It's just nuts. So I've looked at, you know, if you can make it in Alberta, you can make it anywhere, sort of like if you can make it in New York, you know, in the business. But in this business, you know, we're just drowning in competition. It's nuts. So we want the provincial government to help us a little bit. But, you know, because we're in this unique position where we're the only open list province in the country. But, you know, and every other province, it's like, you know, there's different varying levels of difficulty and some are easier than others. And, you know, but, you know, it'd be great if our relationship, not to get too into the weeds here, but if our relationship with each province was a mirror to each province, you know, it was reciprocal. It was like, hey, you know, scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. I think that would be the best. You know, now there's a lot of things I'm not considering there, and I'm not speaking on behalf of the Alberta Small Brewers Association or any kind of thing like that, but this is just sort of my off-the-cuff views.
Okay.
Well,
so,
it's common sense, Ian.
Yeah,
so,
and what
yeah,
a great
we gotta be
education.
Careful with that these days.
Yeah. Oh, no, I'm just happy to learn. Like, I'm learning about his business, but I'm also learning about how fucked up this country is when it comes to
it
jurisdictional delivery. It's unbelievable. Now,
bricks and mortar, opening up a Calgary store, as I understand. Where can we find you in Edmonton, Calgary?
Yeah, so we opened up in Crossroads Market, which is farmer's market. Yeah, a big place down there. So we were lucky to get a booth there. So that was opened a couple months ago, I believe, and that's going great. And then, yeah, we've got, you know, tons of bars and restaurants and liquor stores and stuff like that all throughout Alberta. And sorry, was that the question? Where else can we find you?
Yeah. Where else can we find you? I mean, if you're in Alberta, you want to order, you'll probably, you can deliver, but where else, where's the best place to go? And even just, is it just Sea Change?
You got to go to the tap house.
SeaChangeBeer.com.
On 97th.
OG Tap Room. Is that
it? Yeah. We've got our OG Tap Room, which is great. It's an awesome place to experience the product. And then our Beaumont Tap Room is amazing. And then we're actually opening Shitty's. So Shitty's Distilling is our distilling brand, and we should be opening a tap room for that, which is going to be on 99th Street and 72nd Ave. 78th Ave, pardon me. That should be opening in May or June, so pretty quick here, right away. So that's going to be another area, but not for a Sea Change as much as going to be to get Shitty products. And outside of that, yeah, we have a ton of bar and restaurant partners and liquor stores. I mean, at this point, you can pretty well walk into any liquor store in Alberta and you're going to find us. You know, not all of our products necessarily, but you know, there'll be something. And if there's something that you don't see that you want, one of our new products or something that's a core that you want to see, like the Wolf or the Fairy or the Death Wave in any of the formats, you know, people don't know, but you can talk to the liquor store and they can bring things in for you. So, that's always an option too.
Yeah. Sea Change Beer. If you don't have it in your local liquor store, your local establishment, ask for it. SeaChangeBeer.com is where you can go and find everything Ian and his crew do. Great little merch store. Order some merch. I'm going to order some merch and some straight edge beer when I get off the podcast with you. Pleasure to meet you. Sea Change is the title sponsor for Grease Fire, Lachlan's barbecue show.
Thank you for that, Ian.
Episodes coming out very shortly. We're just in editing, as I understand it, correct?
Yes.
All right.
We're in post.
Yeah, I look forward to seeing that. That's awesome. Thanks for having you guys.
Hey, buddy, anytime.
We may have consumed your product all the way through the cook. Just so good.
Yeah, they're a little different at the end of the actual television show. Congratulations. But thanks for doing this. And, dude, thanks for explaining your business. Thanks for talking about resilience. Thanks for educating us. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for your interest.
Anytime. Talk to you soon. Here you go. Ian from Sea Change Brewing, seachangebeer.com. Nice guy. Smart guy.
That's a success story.
I love that story. I love the story because you didn't. It's one of those stories where you're like, you don't know any better, so you just got to succeed, right? You don't have any hang-ups. You just go for it. Anyway.
You know, it's interesting. So Grant, from the locker room, quit drinking. He had a kid, and he quit drinking for a year. I think he was doing it more to see if he could prove it to himself. I don't think he sat down and said, I got a problem. I need, like, none of that. I think he just said, I think I'm going to try this. I'm a father now. Maybe I'll see if I can not drink. And so he drank straight edge. And he commented multiple times over the course of the year that, because he was trying different ones, and there were just new ones coming out. Like, there was a Heineken one there. They had a Guinness, like a point zero. Yeah. And he tried that one. He's like, it's not too bad, but he raved about straight edge. And I know a couple of people that, for whatever reason, they hit their heads and decided that they weren't going to drink anymore. And they also commented that straight edge was something that you had to try if you were, you know, trying the non-alcoholic route. And again, I
like the taste of a good beer.
Yeah.
I just don't. And I don't like being drunk or affected. That's just how I am. Right. So, that's why I'm not straight edge. I will have a cocktail from time to time, but as a Saturday afternoon, Sunday afternoon, yeah, dude, it's perfect. And they make, like, back in the day when they make non-alcoholic beer, and my dad was trying to kick
absolutely
it.
Absolutely pointless.
Well, that's like, okay, because
I would
you're
never
weird.
In a million years drink no a non-alcoholic beer.
Well, that's because
if somebody slipped one to me, I'd get angry.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. Time for the locker room. Retro.
No, today we're not doing a retro replay.
What are we doing?
Okay, well, I told you, I said that I was going to film that, my first wrestling promo.
Yeah.
You're going to enjoy this. Okay,
so this isn't a locker room retro replay of the day. You didn't mention that.
It's still
start,
about the golf tournament.
All right, go ahead.
Okay, all right, here we go.
All right, I'm Lachlan Cross. I will be hosting the Ardent Roof Systems Charity Golf Tournament
Friday, July 5th, the Ranch Golf and Country Club. And it helps out a very worthy cause, the Stollery Child Life Program. Hit the webpage, ardenroofsystems.com, to sign yourself or a team up and get in on a very good tournament. Probably the best one of the summer. Not probably, the best one of the summer. Speaking of hits, Locke, I hear the biggest rumor of them all, Monster Pro Wrestling is invading, and we're going to be running the dunk tank. We're going to be raising a ton of money for the kids. That's our gimmick. But Locke, I heard a little rumor, some cheating and stuff going on.
Well,
so, you know, I might have to bring a couple of my guys, and if some cheating happens, somebody might have to grab you and put you in a headlock, Locke. And they might have to give you a little nookie on that bald head of yours, Locke. Oh, the glasses, crack the glasses, glass. Locke. Oh, the nose, you. Locke. The nose, the beard, Locke.
Letting someone touch you.
That's perfect. That was fun.
I cannot believe you let that guy touch you. I can't believe you let him touch you, number one. And why were you going like this? Like, explain this look to me. Why were you doing that?
I don't get the wrestling stuff. One of my biggest nightmares.
Why you go do that? I can't believe you let him touch you, dude. Because, like, anytime I've been with you and I've shaken your hand, you're one of those guys who puts his hand up. He's like, yeah, I'll shake your hand, but don't touch me. And that guy fucking gave you a noogie. He hugged you. I cannot believe you let that man.
That's what you do. You the wrestling. You do the promos.
So uncomfortable.
And so massive. Monster Pro Wrestling is a Crier Media client now, and they got a show tonight. The Albert Avenue Community Center. $25 at the door. Go see them. I'm trying to support them. So I went and I look so awkward. I'm such a bad actor.
Oh, awful actor.
Oh yeah, one of my worst nightmares. The Trailer Park Boys. There was a chance we were gonna interview the Trailer Park Boys.
Great guys,
and
by the way.
It was when I was back at the Bear, and the morning show. Something was going on with the morning show, and they weren't going to be able to do it. So they came to me and they said, "The guys want a bubbles," and I don't know. I never watched the show. People will hate hearing that, but I never got into it.
Not watching the Trailer Park Boys at this stage, if you haven't seen it and you're like, I haven't watched it, and you're doing yourself a massive disservice. It is one of the best television shows of all time.
Here's why I didn't watch it. I grew up with those people.
Oh, you had PTSD.
I don't need to watch a show about living in Yak. I lived there for 5 years.
You lived in a trailer for a long time.
I got out. I escaped. When people ask me,
you're the only guy I've ever met who's like, I couldn't watch Trailer Park Boys because I grew up in one.
No, I grew up poor. I grew up with those people.
All right.
That were in and out of jail, that didn't have jobs, that
so your story
stole
is,
each other's cars. I know the show. I could have written it. It was me. From 12 to 18. Okay.
Did you grow up?
That was my life.
Did you grow up like that?
I grew up around those people. People ask me about what's your greatest day of your life, and I've been married. I have two beautiful kids, and I will tell you the day I drove away in my Toyota Tercel.
Yeah.
And I waved to my mom down the long gravel driveway, and I left Yak, BC, and I never
did. Your house have
went
a hitch
back
on it. Did your house have a hitch on it?
I had a home, and I swear to God.
Yeah.
Peter, my stepfather, built this little shack on some land that he bought because he was working in the patch in Alberta. So he bought some land in the south end of BC, the Kootenays. So he put a little shack on it, but the shack wasn't big enough for the family once he met my mom, and it came with an instant couple of kids. So they met when I was like 10 or 11. We moved to Yak when I was 12. It was 1982. And so what did he do? He took a van that he had, because he's a hippie, and he cut a hole in the wall of the house, a one-bedroom home, a one-room home, cut a hole in the side of the house, drove the van into it, and then stuffed blankets around because we couldn't get close enough. So he stuffed blankets and duct taped around and just left the door open to the van. And that's where my mom and Peter slept.
So you did grow up in a trailer park. So there is a reason why you didn't watch Trailer Park Boys. I get it now.
Yeah, okay.
But they came to me. I was at the Bear, and they came to me, and they said Bubbles and Julian and I don't know who else was on the show. They're coming. They're doing some. This was after the show was off TV, and they were doing a casino thing or something. They had a variety show. They want to do an interview, and I'm like, no, I can't do that. I can't be in the same room with people pretending to be somebody else. I like, it's my worst fucking nightmare in this. And so wrestling makes none.
You'd be so terrible.
I'm trying
Disney
to
World.
Support this monster pro wrestling organization. People
well,
love it.
It's just a bunch of people. They love dress it. Up,
go have
around,
fun.
Breathing
I'm going to go have a couple of drinks tonight.
Attaboy. Oh, is it tonight? You're doing it? Monster Pro Wrestling, $25 at the door. Where is it again?
Alberta Avenue Community Center.
There you go. Alberta Avenue Community Center. It's funny to you, but I don't even know where that is.
Just it's an Edmonton thing. Google it. It's at a community center.
Okay, I'll Google it.
Next Friday, they're having a meat draw. And there'll probably be a spring craft sale on
Good
Sunday,
for
too.
Them, a bake sale, maybe. They'll do magazine sales door to door.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At the community center.
It's great.
Yeah.
I love it.
All right.
Before we go, I just wanted to mention, did you know Alex Jones just endorsed Pierre Poilievre?
This is what we were fighting about at the beginning of the show. And it wasn't
we'll
really
talk about
a fight.
It on Monday.
I'm just
we'll talk about it on Monday.
We can talk about it.
In a fun way. Don't get angry.
No, listen.
There we go.
Listen, Dean. You know I love you. We've been doing this 3 years now, okay? And now that I got shit canned, I'm very gracious that you've allowed me a place to land, and we're doing this daily, and this show is getting better. The more and more we do, but I'm trying to get you out of your silo. You're in a bit of
I'm not in one.
Dean, you are. You're in a silo where you think that everyone cares about this, and the whole country.
You don't think anybody cares about Alex
everyone
endorsing
is,
Pierre Poilievre for Prime Minister of Canada?
Hates this bullshit. They
right,
fucking
we'll
hate it.
Monday.
Everyone hates it.
I don't know, dude. I put that tweet out yesterday. It has like a million views.
Twitter is not the real world. I'm going to go to wrestling tonight, and there's going to be 400 people at the Alberta Avenue Community
that
Center.
That is true. Yeah,
and
they're
I
not going to care about
you. I bet you less than 10% of them are even on fucking Twitter.
Not even my target audience.
They might not even know who PP is.
Oh, guaranteed they do. Not our target audience.
Guaranteed they don't. I would be willing to bet. I'm going to do a little survey tonight. I'm going to go around and ask the participants of Monster Pro Wrestling tonight, from an audience perspective, how many of them know who PP is?
Okay.
I bet you it's 25%.
Yeah, do that and bring me the audio back. We'll find out. Next week, can I tee up our guests for next week? Big week.
Yeah, because you and I need to figure out where we're putting them all, too. That's the other thing.
David Moskrop, one of my favorite people on the planet. Maybe my favorite journalist, David Moskrop. Dr. David Moskrop.
I'm always a little bit leery about getting David on because he's so smart. And he makes me look so dumb.
Well, he does that to people unnaturally. You just got to hang in there. Frank Graves, president of Ecos Research, has some new research on political polling. So you're going to have to hang in there for that one next week.
What's his name? Kevin what?
Frank Graves. Close.
Oh, Frank?
Yep.
Graves.
Yeah, Frank Graves. Close. Not done there. Charlie Angus. I am breaking my rule of talking to politicians to speak to the recently retired NDP MP from Timmins, Ontario, Charlie Angus.
Got
great guy. Not done there. Creek Pete. Viral sensation. Laughs through all of his news stories. He's going to join us next week as well.
How do you spell Creek?
C-R-E-E-K.
So his first name's Creek?
Last name's Creek. First name's Pete. Got a little creative with his Twitter name. Creek Pete 2 on Twitter.
Okay. All right.
Great dude.
I was going to say, if his first name's Creek, then he has fucking a connection to Southern BC and a hippie family as well.
Well, he might actually reignite your love for politics. You might enjoy it because he laughs through all this stuff like everybody else should, like we all should be doing. So we're going to have a little chat with him next week. It's going to be a lot of fun. Big week next week. Come and join us.
I want you to think about what I said here today.
I don't even remember.
You're in a silo, and that what you are experiencing and what you think is important and everyone's talking about.
You don't know me. You don't know what I do all day. We meet here for an hour. I'm out all the time. I went out twice yesterday. Two times. No silo.
My wife actually said to me this week, because I've been spending a lot of time at home and you and I are talking a lot. And I think it was after another hour long conversation where I said, I'm going to go like four times. She was giggling every time I said, I'm going to go. And then we just kept going. And it's not you or me. It's both of us. We're both the problem. I got off the phone and she went, you know what? Tomorrow you should go out.
You should leave the house.
Dude, you knew it was coming anytime, right? Like you knew it. And you probably want to tell her the same thing too. Anyway, I got to go. I got a meeting. Lachlan Cross. Great to see you. Lachlan Cross on Twitter. See you on Monday. Brother. All right, buddy. I'll talk to you soon. That's it for us. Have a great day, everybody. Don't forget, everything we do can be found at Cryer Media. Have a wonderful day, friends. We'll see you Monday. Oh, bye-bye.
'm Logan Anderson, host of the Say the Damn Score podcast. On my show, I deep dive into the sports broadcasting business by, you guessed it, talking to sportscasters. The show has featured big names like Bob Costas, Kenny Albert, and Vern Lundquist, as well as many up-and-coming broadcasters who you may not know yet, but you will know soon. Whether you're looking for professional development as a sportscaster, different career paths, or if you just want to be entertained by hearing some of the best storytellers in the world tell their own stories, this podcast is for you. You can subscribe to the podcast on all major podcast platforms, or you can visit our website, SayTheDamnScore.com.
Hi, I'm Mercedes Nickel, four-time Winter Olympian and host of Dropping In, a podcast with Mercedes. This is a podcast where I interview a bunch of different people. I get the good, the bad, and the ugly, as well as I share my stories along the way. Now you can drop in at droppingin.com or subscribe on Apple, Spotify, and YouTube. I'll see you soon.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.